Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Tortoise Shack podcast. You know what I'm about to say, and you want to click forward 30 seconds, but please hear me out. We've a lot of stuff coming your way this week, including the podcast that went out already with young journalist Mahmoud Mushtaha, who is on the ground in Gaza. And it's actually some uplifting stuff. It's not all doom and gloom as we've been used to. So there's some good news there, and that's available right now on the Patreon feed. So that's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So if you're not a member, please join us. Help us keep going in 2024. I know I keep saying it's the year of elections, but it really is. And we've lots and lots that we want to cover. And we want to be able to continue to have tough conversations with people who are putting themselves forward as the alternative, and tough conversations with people who are putting themselves forward as the almighty. So if you can, if you have a few quid, if you think you met us down the shops and you said, would you grab a cup of coffee, and you throw us the price for a cup of coffee, this is the way to do it. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And for that, you're getting a ton of additional content, all of our podcasts in one consolidated feed, and they're entirely plea free. So you don't have to listen to me beg. But unfortunately, independent media means just that. We have no ads. We have no sponsors. We want to remain completely independent and free from all corporate interests and editorial oversight that are linked to these corporate interests. So if you can, if you like what we do, if you're one of the thousands of people who are listening, and while you know it's free, you understand that there is a value to it, then please give something back. Last time, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. I'll shut up now. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Palcast, a podcast brought to you by Yusuf Al-Jamal here in Istanbul, Helena Coben, and Tony Groves. Helena is at the London Book Fair this week. We wish her a very good luck, and it's March 12th, 4:25 p.m. In Istanbul, and we're very delighted to have Shahid Abu Salama. Shahid is a dear friend of mine. She's a Palestinian academic born and raised in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza and is currently based in London. She recently got her PhD from Sheffield Hallam University. She worked there briefly, I believe, and there was a decision to end her contract. She's in a legal battle now with the university. Very happy to have you, Shahid. I wish we...
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I wish if we could have had you in different circumstances. Yeah. How is the situation back home? How is your family?
Shukran, Yusuf. First, my love and solidarity with you and with all our people struggling in Gaza and across Palestine from the river to the sea. We shouldn't forget that while things are too horrific in Gaza, the violence is also escalating in Jerusalem and West Bank and even in the north of historic Palestine, across Palestine. Israeli and settler colonial violence is nonstop. And I also need to correct you. The contract wasn't terminated. I chose to leave the university. I chose to leave Sheffield Hallam University after I was hounded out of my job, basically, to use the correct term. I was hounded out after being subjugated to 3 unjust investigations that were inherently racist and took the side of the colonizer against the colonized. And the funny thing that I was teaching a course called Postcolonial Media Culture. And of course, when you look at Palestine and you think of a term like postcolonial, the post and the postcolonial is destroyed in Palestine just by looking at how settler colonialism and imperialism is alive and kicking.
Allow me to cut you. I would like to, before we delve into the legal case and battle against the university, I would like you to talk more about the situation of your family. I know that your brother and father are displaced in the south of Gaza. You lost family members in the north. You come from the north. How is the situation? Also, you were able to get your mom out of Gaza. Please tell us about the latest updates and what happened to your family since October 7.
Yeah. It was barely a week after the start of the genocide when my family had to leave our beautiful home in the north. And they left with literally like few things in a packed in a backpack. And they had no clue that they would be counting now more than 5 months. And they would not be able to go home. And right now, most of my family, most of my extended family remains in the north. And they're dealing with not only bombardments, but also forced starvation. And it's just beyond our capacity to comprehend or process. The cruelty, the level of cruelty and dehumanization is just beyond any words. And
You lost family members, right?
I've lost more than 40 of my extended family.
Sorry to hear that.
It's incredible. It's incredible, Yusuf. But I know like every one of us is counting dozens, like even my family's like a mild example in comparison to, for example, Annanouk or so many other families. Like, my God, like there were families that are wiped out of the civil registry. In their multiple generations, multi-generation families are wiped out of civil registry. And my brother right now is the only one of my nuclear family who's in Rafah. He's stranded in Rafah. And despite all our desperate attempts to get him evacuated, he's denied. For no reason, for arbitrary reason. It feels like they're entertaining new ways of oppressing us, inventing new ways of oppression. It's just too brutal, to be honest. And my brother, he's separated from his wife and two daughters who managed to leave only a few weeks ago. They managed to escape. And of course, when they were included on the list of the evacuation, we were like torn between like, you know, leaving Muhammad behind or make sure that some of our family survive. And this is how we think these days. Like this is only just a reflection of the gravity of the situation that we're thinking, oh, like, let's just save as many as we can. And Muhammad, hopefully he will be saved, but we're not sure. We're living with a 50-50% chance if they live or die every day for more than 5 months.
And I'm really sorry to hear that. And I know what you're talking about. I was able to get my mom and brother out of Gaza recently, and the rest of my family is in Gaza, in Nusayrat refugee camp. You were also able to get your mom out earlier. And I know that your dad is also in Gaza, right?
No, my dad managed, alhamdulillah, he managed to be evacuated from Gaza on the 7th of February. So
good to hear that, finally.
So he's in Cairo at the minute. He's in Cairo at the minute. And my mom, once they left, until now, they're recovering from sickness. My nieces are sick. One of them is 5 years old and the other is 5 months old. And both of them are still sick. And my mom, with her nursing background, she couldn't stay in Spain, while knowing that my dad and my nieces and my sister-in-law were sick. So she just took a flight and went to Cairo. But hopefully it's a matter of time before we bring them to Spain. And hopefully it is also a matter of time before we all return and we rebuild what they destroyed.
I think this is a very powerful statement, Tony. You know, the idea of rebuilding and restarting again and again. This is the symbol of Gaza City's municipality. The bird that rises from the ashes, and the phoenix. This is the story of Gaza, and we're all, you know, as Palestinian academics and intellectuals and activists, looking forward to rebuilding Gaza and contributing to our society. This death has been imposed on us. We love life, and we want to rebuild our city. And we're our hearts are shattered, but again, we do not have any other option but to restart and to rebuild and to resist.
But I put it to both of you, in both of how you speak about your own personal family situations, there's also survivor's guilt. There's also the idea that, you know, because I know Yusuf, before we came on air, I was telling you about my friend Mahmoud Mushtaha, who has been given an opportunity to travel to come and work in Europe. And he's in Rafah now waiting to leave. But he knows he's leaving behind his family as well. So these are the options. These are the choices that are being put to people. And his family want him to go. They want him to take the opportunity that's come to him. But if I wanted to take work in London tomorrow, I can just get on a plane or a ferry and go, and I can come back to Dublin anytime I want. So it's much more monumental, Shahid. When you talk about it, it's a potentially life changing decision that beyond what, you know, the normal steps of people who, you know, travel just to broaden their horizons or see this is completely different.
Not comparable.
No.
Comparable the least, but it breaks our hearts so much. I mean, it is shattering. And how many times did we have to rebuild and rebuild and rebuild? And you have to remember, the Palestinians are stateless, and we're the native of that land. We're the original people of that land. The Israelis, most of them have double citizenships, if not triple citizenships. They can go whenever. Even when the genocide started, they were all leaving to their original countries, going back to their original countries. The Palestinians are stuck. That itself tells you of the reality of settler colonialism that we're living. That in itself is very telling. But I mean, I didn't know that you're Irish, and I'm just like, I have a special love and bond to the Irish. And
I'm just Yusuf's Dublin friend. That's it at this stage.
You're more than that, Tony. And, you know, speaking of targeting Gaza and destroying Gaza and targeting Palestinian academics, Tony and I, and you yourself, and you, Rifat Al-Ar'ir, and I would like to ask you about how Rifat touched your life, and how, you know, how you knew him, and how he changed your life in a way.
It was you and Rifat, you know. Yani, the word has to be said that I always saw you as an extension of each other. And I'm sorry, Habibi. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I can't even imagine that he's truly gone. I can't accept that. I don't know, like a lot to process. But you remember, we were young. We were young and we thought we could change the world. And we wanted to change the world. And we saw Rifat, who was like older than us and teaching us. And he was very active, like Dr. Haidar and people like us who were active in the struggle in any form. Of course, like they would know Rifat. But I remember that when I knew Rifat, I knew you too. Because it was done around a writing context to amplify the cause of the Palestinian political prisoners. And at that time, we were very active, if you remember, in like 2012, 2013, we were very active on behalf of the Palestinian prisoners movement and the hunger strikes. There were collective hunger strikes and individual hunger strikes, and we were doing our utmost to amplify their struggle from captivity. And I remember then that you guys had partnered with a Malaysian NGO, and I won the context basically
to produce the book to produce the book that became a shared struggle. Ultimately, wasn't it, Yusuf? It was you.
No, this is a different project, but it was a very good theoretical, you know, introduction to a shared struggle. It was basically a creative writing contest that Rifat launched to amplify the voices of Palestinian political prisoners and tell their stories. So we had paintings, we had stories, we had articles, and we had different contributors, including from outside Palestine. And I remember when the results were announced, we had this celebration at the Unknown Soldier Square in Gaza. Now it's a ruin. And we had some political prisoners also participating, and we handed over the gifts to people who took part. Shahid was one of them, and the majority of people who contributed were young Palestinians from Gaza.
Young. Like really young and cute.
Yeah.
So Chad, you're still like, you're still young. It's Yusuf who's getting old.
No, we were like 20s, like in our early 20s. Like I remember I was like barely probably 20, 19, yeah. 20, something like that. But Yusuf, I mean Yusuf, when what year were you born? You're my age.
Almost, yeah, 1989. So we are the same age, and you know, so Rifat was a little bit older than us, not too much older than us, and he's just 10 years older than us. But we saw in him, you know, as the figure for young people, and he was very active. He was everywhere doing these creative writing contests, workshops, conferences, writing, social media. He was multitasking all his life, you know.
Discussions and
yeah,
incredible. Like there were so many activities,
and you know, there is a price for these
almost like
activities.
Revolution, almost like revolution.
He did. He trained an entire generation of young writers, and I see, you know, the seeds of a revolution being planted by Rifat in Gaza, and we will see this, you know, in the next few years. His impact and legacy will live on for many years to come. And let me share this news with you. Actually, I got it today. The news is that the Rifat Al Arir Memorial Prize for PhD Research Excellence, awarded to top PhD thesis in media studies at the University of Witwatersrand, has now been approved in South Africa.
Wow.
So that's something I got today, and I worked on recently getting the approval from Rifat's family, and you know, seeing all these initiatives to basically remember Rifat and tell his story. So he's never gone. He's here. He's there. He's everywhere. He's global now.
He's definitely immortal.
Yeah. Remember the phrase? What is it? You can. It's not the years in your age, but it's the age in your years. That he packed in so much and so much time. Like, I mean,
Ghassan Kanafani said like something, a sentence that is just so beautiful. Like, you can kill the person, but you can't kill the idea. Mm. And Rifat was this idea that will outlive him, inshallah. It will definitely outlive him. And his soul is living through us. It's living through Yusuf. It's living through me. It's living through so many of us that he touched so deeply.
You know, I was his right hand. So whenever he wanted to create a workshop.
He called you his nemesis. He called you his
nemesis. Yes, he called me many things, including his arch nemesis, but, you know, in a positive way. And I would always help him organize workshops and talks. Many of them are on YouTube now. So there is a price, you know, Shahid, and you have paid a price for your activism or for being Palestinian and anti-colonial. You were teaching at a UK university, and they started investigations against you. And this is common. I mean, we've heard similar stories of people, university professors being sacked for their positions on what's happening in Palestine, including now the genocide in Gaza, but also before. Could you please tell us about what happened to you in the UK and what legal action are you taking and considering against Harlem Sheffield University?
I'll speak about it briefly. I don't want to speak about it too much because, to be honest, at the minute, like, I only want to stop the genocide. Just, I feel like anything else is a distraction. I really do. I don't want to speak about myself. I just want to speak about the people starving to death, the people that are like losing limbs, the people that are bleeding to death without any ambulances coming to, like, the people that are under the rubble for hours and hours and days sometimes, and no one able to take them from under the rubble. This is our everyday for 5 months. And of course, we've struggled, and we know, like, our struggles go back 75 years. And this only just one, like, the price that I paid is, like, nothing in comparison to the lives that have been sacrificed. Rifat al-Ara'ir's life, all of our loved ones, my cousin Yusuf, who was, like, brother to me. My cousin Rana, people like my nieces, my Khalil, my cousins' children, all of them, three of them, all of them.
Could you please tell us about them and who they were? You know, I know it's terrible, and you know these people had stories, and I want you to share the stories of these people with us.
Let me tell you about Khalil. Khalil, my cousin, he had a wife and three children, and he had to escape his home and go somewhere safer. Yeah. So he escaped his home and went to my other cousin's home. So he's married to another. So my cousin Rana is married to the brother of his wife. Yeah. Anyway, so they.
Okay, this is common in Gaza.
So Khalil went and escaped to Rana's cousin, yeah? So they were all together, and their in-laws as well. So there were loads of people at home. And we know, like, the least home at the minute, like, they have 50. the least Palestinian home. And in that one single attack, I lost 22 members of my extended family. Khalil had a wife and three children. His wife was a nurse, and she was serving in the Indonesian hospital. She was working so hard, like legendary, the work that the health sector, the Palestinian health workers have shown is absolutely legendary. She went home, she missed her children, she went home, and that was the day that she was buried in the rubble, under the rubble, with all her three children. And he, just by accident, happened to be outside. He survived. So he had a wife and three children, and overnight, he's alone. This is only one story.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine how difficult it is, especially these days, and what people are observing Ramadan, and they meet, you know, for the breakfast meal every day, and there are a lot of people missing from the table. I can imagine the pain which Palestinian, you know, political prisoners and their families have always felt. Now it's just a different level, where entire families have been wiped out from the civil registry, as you mentioned. It's very painful. I would like you to again conclude briefly and talk about your legal battle.
Can I just make a point on that? Because I think it's important that if you're not comfortable talking about it, that's absolutely fine. But what I will say...
But
from the knowledge of what we say, this is constructive dismissal.
It is constructive dismissal. And it's clear. Like, I was targeted by the pro-Israel lobby in the UK. The despicable Jewish Chronicle and Campaign Against Antisemitism and all these Zionist groups that are trying to consolidate another myth to serve Israel, that is basically anti-Zionism equates anti-Semitism, which is far, far, far away from the truth. And all of this is basically an ideological construction that aims to distract from Israel's war crime and justify Israel's existence and distract and protect them, shield them from accountability. We understand that. We understand that. And I just never expected to have something as vicious, like, targeted my way. They exhausted me, honestly. They exhausted me. And none of us is a superhuman. We're all humans. And none of us should have to deal with any of that, whether silencing or demonization or killing or any form of dehumanization should be unacceptable. But we have, of course, faced such dehumanizations. Such forms of dehumanization in and out of Palestine, and I'm fighting because I don't want I don't want Israel and its allies to succeed at making the IHRA definition of antisemitism the new norm, the IHRA definition of antisemitism onto which I was investigated. Is basically trying to make pro-Palestine activism illegal on campus.
I just want to make listeners aware, because we've had this conversation. One of my friends, with the Jewish Voices for Peace here. We'll talk about this, how dangerous it is that the idea that any criticism of Israel is therefore anti-Semitic. And that is obviously not the case here. But in the UK, it's pretty, like, it's, Ireland is much more okay to hear that argument. But the UK, you have Rishi Sunak coming out only a week ago calling hate marches and echoing the stuff that Suella Braverman said. So unfortunately, this is, it's crazy. We're 100 kilometers away, and we look at it as with our view of settler colonialism and our history, and we say this is just wrong. And yet in the UK there seems to be this idea that any criticism of Israel, as I said, is deemed anti-Semitic, which is clearly not true.
Absolutely not. And listen, like, Israel has tried so hard to, they've created too many myths and made it become the so-called truth. But we can see through this. The Irish can see through this. And anyone with any bit of, you don't have to have a PhD, you don't have to have, you don't have to be an expert on Palestine. You could just be a human and you will see through this. You will see that this is wrong. That why the Palestinians have to pay for Western European anti-Semitism? Why? We had nothing to do with Nazi Germany. We had nothing to do with the Holocaust. Why do we have to pay for this? And the Palestinians have lived side to side, regardless of their religion. And you know what? I'll give you just one small example. On my way to speak to you, I saw a woman, and she was wearing a white T-shirt with Nakba written on it. Nakba is the Arabic for catastrophe. I saw her, and I'm wearing my T-shirt. Wa inni uhibbuki, and I love you, Palestine. And so we saw each other. We recognized each other. This is in Barcelona. We recognized each other, and I went to her, and we just hugged. Honestly, like, it's ridiculous, but we hugged without even knowing each other. And then I ask, "Are you Palestinian?" And she says, "No, I'm actually a Jew, but I am Palestinian," she says. And I told her, "It's okay. You are Palestinian. You are Palestinian, and we will win with love. We will win with love. And this evil that is called Israel, that is privileging one community over the other, so they indefinitely dominate Palestinians and our land between the river and the sea."
Absolutely. This reminds me of the slogan of the podcast, One World, One Struggle. I would like to thank you, Shahid, very much for sharing your family's story with us today. I know it's very painful, but these stories deserve to be told, because we are not numbers. I would like also to thank my co-host, Tony Groves, who joined us from Dublin. He's a very fine Irish man, and he comes from the Echo Chamber podcast.
Today we can be one.
Yes,
if
yes.
We all stand as one.
That's yes, this song is perfect. From Marcella.
You have a beautiful voice. Yes. A beautiful voice.
Listen, I just want to also note to your listeners that I am fundraising for my legal costs, and you can find the link on my Instagram page. If you could help me reach the target, that would be great.
If you give us the link, we'll put it in this podcast listeners. It'll be on the podcast, so you can click there. Thank you so much. This was brilliant.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I would like to thank our other co-host, Helena Coben, from the Just Word Educational. She's in London at the London Book Fair this week. She couldn't join us. We wish her a very good luck. And I would like to thank our co-sponsor, the Hashim Sani Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Malaya. And see you next week.
Oh, my name is Rifat Arair, from Gaza town I came. That city I will never see again. For in the town of Gaza, I spent many happy days. I love the town in all so many ways. For it's there I spent my childhood and found for me a wife. I then set out to make for her a life. But all my young ambitions met with bitterness and hate. I soon found myself inside a gravestone. And you dare to call me a terrorist while you lock down your gun. And I think of all the deeds that you have done. You have plundered many nations, divided many lands. You have terrorized our peoples. You ruled with an iron hand, and you brought this reign of terror to my land.